That's an amazing story.
Yeah. So we're on Kuf Hei Amud Aleph, and I think we'll have to start the sugya on the bottom of Kuf Dalet Amud Beis.
Tanya Beit Shammai Omrim?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Thank you. Tanya Beit Shammai Omrim Mekaneach Ubisol Omrim Meidiach. In the Havami, the Gemara understood that this is a machlokas. Later, the Gemara is going to backtrack. And we're going to have a long discussion about what exactly is Mekaneach and what is Meidiach. But just on a superficial level, Mekaneach means you take something into your mouth. We're going to have various possibilities as to what you take into your mouth. And Meidiach means to wash out your mouth. So we're talking about a person who eats cheese, gvina, and now he wants to eat meat. And the question is, what hefsek does he have to make between the cheese and the meat? So the Gemara thinks that it would make sense for Beit Shammai to be machmir, because the perek in Edios, the fourth perek of Edios, lists the exceptional cases where Beit Shammai is mekil. But in the large, the majority of cases, Beit Shammai is always the machmir. We assume, since this is not listed in Edios, this would be another example of the typical machlokas Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel, where Beit Shammai is machmir. And that would tempt me to think that Beit Shammai requires not only Hadochas HaPeh, but he adds Kinuach HaPeh. So, my Mekaneach, Umay Meidiach. And this is more or less what we got up to yesterday. So now we're on Kuf Hei Amud Aleph. Ilema, if we're going to say Beit Shammai Omer, according to Beit Shammai Mekaneach, Viloboy Meidiach, Beis Hillel disagree with Omerim, Meidiach v'lovoy mekaneach. So we're making it now, in a sense, an extreme machlokas. What would be the mafsik between gvina and basar? And Beit Shammai requires kinuach. Beis Hillel requires hadacha. So this is a problem because of Rav Zeira. Why? Because Elahadi Amar Rav Zeira. Now, the premise is going to be, not only is this an extreme machlokas, it's either A or B and mutually exclusive, but not only that, we have to pass him like Beis Hillel, because we always pass him like Beis Hillel. If we pass him like Beis Hillel, then what we're going to find is that we require Hadochas HaPeh. Elohadi Omer Abzera Ein Kinuach HaPeh Elo Bachilas Pas Keman Ke Beis Shammai. Could it be that Abzera accepted the Sheet of Beit Shammai and he requires Achilas Pas, which means Kinuach HaPeh is Achilas HaPas? Now, Beis Hillel say that the correct way of doing it and the requirement is going to be Hadochas HaPeh. Ella, but rather, let's reinterpret. Beit Shammai Omrim Mekaneach V'loboy Meidiach U'Beis Hillel Af Meidiach. It means that Beit Shammai is going to be the Mekil. Again, this is counterintuitive, as the Gemara is going to argue right now. But right at this particular point in the sugya, Beit Shammai becomes the Mekil. They require Kinuach and only Kinuach. Whereas Beis Hillel require not only Kinuach, but also Meidiach. Now, if Beis Hillel require two Mafsikim to separate between the Achilles Gvin and the Achilles Basar, Rabbi Zeira was addressing one of those two Mafsikim in order to interpret what constitutes Kinuach. Notice he's not denying that you need Hadochas HaPeh as well. That was already clear. That's already explicit in the words of Beis Hillel. But the concept of kinuach, which according to Abzeir, both Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai agree is a requirement as a mafsik, just that Beit Shammai say all you need is Kinuach HaPeh exclusively, you don't need anything else. And Beis Hillel adds Kinuach HaPeh to Hadochas HaPeh. Reb Zera addresses the question, what constitutes Kinuach HaPeh? And he limits it to Achilas Pas. We're going to soon see that the Gemara is going to have other opinions, and we're going to expand it beyond Achilas Pas. So the Gemara asks, if this be the case, Havile Mikuli Beit Shammai Michumri Beis Hillel. If Beit Shammai, for Beit Shammai, it's sufficient to have Hadocha, I'm sorry, Kinuach, and Beis Hillel require not only Kinuach but also Hadocha. Comes out to Beis Hillel are more lenient than that. It comes out to Beit Shammai are more lenient than Beis Hillel. And if that be the case, it should have been listed. Listening means in a Mishnah. We should have had this listed in the Mishnah in the fourth parak of Edios. Gabi Kulei Beit Shammai v'Chumri Beis Hillel. So Gemara's proof is from the absence of this case on the list. We have to figure out a way in which Beit Shammai would not be Makil vis-a-vis Beis Hillel. If you're going to say Beit Shammai will accept one mafsik, and all you need is one mafsik, in this case Kinuach, there's no requirement to Adoch Saper, then Beit Shammai being Makil, because Beis Hillel clearly required not only Hadoch HaSapeh, but also Kinuach, even though Beis Hillel only express in an explicit way the requirement of Hadoch HaSapeh. But since we saw Rabbi Zera requiring Kinuach, it means that we accept Beis Hillel, but not only in the requirement of Hadoch, but also in Kinuach. No, if that be the case, then Beit Shammai are being Makil. Hello. So this is a turnaround. At this point, the Gemara has a whole new approach. Beit Shammai omri mekaneach v'hu adin l'meidiach, u'Beis Hillel omri meidiach v'hu adin l'mekaneach. U'mar o'machad u'mar o'chad v'lo plik. Even though there's no machlokes, they both say that one of the two is sufficient. Beit Shammai focused on one of those two, and Beis Hillel on the other of the two, but they both agree that mutually, that Beis Hillel, if he's talking to Beit Shammai, he would say that yes, Kinuach HaPeh is certainly sufficient. I want to add another possibility, another alternative, a different mafsik, and that's called Hadoch HaSapeh. And Beit Shammai is turning to Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel mentioned Hadoch HaSapeh, and Beit Shammai say, well, it doesn't have to be Hadoch HaSapeh, that doesn't have exclusive rights, but Kinuach HaPeh would also be sufficient. And both of them require one of the two. That's one shot in the sugya, and that's going to be the Rashba's sheet. So again, let's just summarize the sugya according to the Rashba. The Rashba is of the opinion that both Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai require only one mafsik. You have two alternatives. You have Kinuach, which is the alternative that was mentioned by Beit Shammai. You have Hadocha, which was mentioned by Beis Hillel.
Doesn't that make the wording of that braita extremely problematic?
Not necessarily.
Because it implies, from the braita, it implies that there is a machloket. My learning is limited, but I've never seen this.
It depends what you put at the beginning of the braisa, meaning the braisa as we have it just records two opinions. The question is what came before that?
So let's
offer the question that came before Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai. You know, it's Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel coming to answer a question. That's not explicit in the braisa as we have it. But the question would be, what could be a mafsik between Gvina and Basa? Beit Shammai offers one opportunity, one alternative, and Beis Hillel another. But they're just going through the various alternatives.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay.
So that's all according to the Rashba. But I want to study with you Rashi, because I think Rashi clearly, unless you can slug me up here, has a different interpretation of this Gemara. So we're looking at the Rashi, which is about eight lines down from the top, or let's say four, five, six. Yeah, eight lines down from the top. Af Meidiach. Do you see that?
Yeah.
So the words Af Meidiach are going on this maskan of the Gemara, that the Gemara says Okay, we have a slightly different gears. So we have a gears of Hu Hadin Meidiach. Okay, Rashi has Af Meidiach. Mm-hmm. But the main point of the first two words of this Rashi is Travayu Be'inon. And if I understand this Rashi, Travayu Be'inon, correctly, he is telling us that you need both.
Oh, the Rashba is just saying you need one or the other?
Correct. The Rashba is saying that Beis Hillel was turning to Beit Shammai and saying, well, let me give you another alternative that could substitute, replace your mafsik. And Beit Shammai turned to Beis Hillel and say, well, I have another alternative. But they both agree there are two alternatives and either one of them are sufficient. But Rashi says, and he repeats himself again, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, take a look at the next Rashi. He says, V'hu adin, Rashi says, the Travayu Be'ina. Now, if you look at Tosfos, Mekaneach v'hu adin l'meidiach, he says, Travayu Be'ina could appear as Bekuntres, V'chein Pirish Rabbeinu Chananel. So we have now the following. We have Rashi, Rabbeinu Chananel, we have Tosfos, and they all are against the Rashba. The Rashba holds that one of the two is sufficient. And when the Gemara says, Mekaneach v'hu adin meidiach, what the Gemara is saying is that Mekaneach is one possibility, and the other possibility is Meidiach, and vice versa. Now, what presses the Rashba? You know, given the historical background here, you're talking about Rashi, you're talking about Rabbeinu Chananel, you're talking about the Baalei HaTosfos. I mean, these are, I don't have to tell you, these are big giants. And the Rashba is a little bit later historically. Let's say he's two generations later, and he's coming along and saying, no, it's either or. So I have a footnote here in which he says the following. That all of the Rashba, what pushes the Rashba is the brisa that we had earlier of Agra. He was talking, Agra, about putting chicken and cheese on the same table, or I shouldn't say on the same table, but at least eating them one after the other. Be'apikoren, and be'apikoren means below netilas yadayim, u below kinuach hapev adocha. In other words, now the word adocha doesn't appeal. Let's go back to the brisa on daf kuf dalet amid beis, and we're going to look at the brisa and see if hadocha is mentioned. And it says the following: Tana Agra, etc. Of Ugvina Necholim the Apikorin, who Tanivu Amarla. In other words, Agra is going to interpret the brisa that he brings, and he writes below Netilas Yadayim, u below Kinuach HaPeh, and that's called Apikorin. Notice that he leaves out Hadocha, correct? So the Rashba had this problem. Madulo hizkir Hadocha. And he answers, Elabade bi echad mehem dai. The word Hadocha is basically a catchphrase, if you will, for either Hadocha or Kinuach. Otherwise, if Hadocha and Kinuach, the way Rashi interprets it, are two requirements, then certainly he should have mentioned both of them. Why did he mention only one of them? The answer is because one is sufficient, and when you mention one, it means one or the other. But the bottom line is that, and this is very important, we'll have to see in Shulchan Aruch how we paskin, that we have machlokas here between one school of thought, which is headed up by Rashi, that requires both Hadocha and Kinuach, and the Rashba, who requires only one of them, whichever one it is, doesn't matter. We're off to Gufa now.
I have another question, though. Could the Rashi and Rashba had different girsot? Because when I see Rashi's girsa off, that strikes me as meaning and. But when I see our Gemara's girsa of Huadin, I may be wrong, that seems to me to be an or.
Could that be the root of their...
Maybe, but Rashi also has who I didn't. Take a look at the next Rashi. I actually read the wrong Rashi for you. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the Rashi I read for you, but... There's a more explicit Rashi, but who Adin, which is really out.
Okay, very good.
So Rashi certainly has that gear.
Okay, thank you.
Gufa. So now we're going back to Rabbi Zera. You remember Rabbi Zera requires for kinuach that you chew up a piece of bread. Amar Rabbi Zera in kinuach hapeh ela bipas. So the Gemara says not only it's bad enough that Rabbi Zera requires pas and only pas. But even pas we have to whittle down. It's not any pas. Now, I eat spelt bread. I don't know where he would put spelt bread, but take a look. He says, Hani mili bidechiti. He requires wheat bread. I hope it could be even whole wheat bread. I don't know. I'm not even sure about whole wheat bread. We'll see as we go along. Avol bidesh sa'ari. But what about a bread that's made out of barley bread? By the way, does anybody eat barley bread? Can you get that on the market? It's...
Well, if you go to some place like Natural Choice, I'm sure they have it.
Natural Choice in the Shuk. Because generally speaking, barley in the Gemara is considered Michael Behema. So I don't know. Lo. Now, what's the problem with Seorim, with a pas made of barley? Because if we get a grasp on that, then perhaps we can get a clue as to what actually works for Kinuach HaPeh. And this is important for the next time you eat cheese, especially according to Rashi, who says that kinuach hapeh is your only option, is an absolute requirement, and you have to do adach as well. Whereas the Rashba would say, just do adach if you have any question about kinuach, you don't know which bread is good. He says the following. What's the problem with pasi orim? He says, misporeres bitoch hapeh. So it sounds to me that there are two types of bread. There's bread that's solid, and when you chew it up, there are solid pieces that go between your teeth, and they would remove any sort of particles of cheese. And then there's something called misporeris, where if you take the bread, let's say you take it with your hands, obviously he's doing it with his mouth, but if you take it with your hands and start rubbing it, it starts disintegrating. It falls apart into small little pieces.
So actually the secret is gluten.
Is that it? Is that
that's what it seems to me. In other words, it's,
is there less? Is there less gluten in seorim?
Well, that's what I gathered from Rashi. I don't really know.
Interesting, because I never heard that barley bread has less gluten. But in any event, he's saying the substance or the density of chitin is such that it could really clean out your mouth. But the density of seorim is such that it mispoleres b'toch hapeh. It literally crumbles in his mouth. And therefore, eino mischaber legush echad b'shas ha'le'isa. In other words, you want some sort of solid substance, he calls it gush echad, at the time that you chew it up. And seorin is not going to do the job. It's not going to be mekaneach the peh. It's not going to get rid of the particles of cheese in a proper way, in a thorough way. Now the Gemara further reduces it, restricts it. Udechiti nami, don't think that every single wheat bread is appropriate for kinuach hapeh. Lo amarin ela bekrira, which means it's been out of the oven for a certain while, so it's cooled off. Aval bechamima, but if it's right out of the oven, in Yiddish we call it fresh gebacht, right, fresh baked, and it's still warm, that's not going to be a good thing. Why? Here it's the exact opposite, because mishtar shatre. You know, now we're talking about something that's too soft. Rashi says nasarach. It's so soft when it's right out of the oven; it hasn't gotten a chance to harden yet. Therefore, Rashi says nidbak bechech. It really sticks to his palate. It doesn't really sink in between the teeth. Now, Rav Osai, one of the things I want to discuss with you is what about toothpicks or dental floss, or now they have other ways of getting particles out between your teeth. They have these, these bows. You know what I mean? It's like a bow and an arrow. You know, as a piece, it's also kind of like a dental floss. And they keep developing more sophisticated ways. In fact, I was wondering if in contemporary life, maybe Adachas HaPeh alone could be sufficient, even according to Rashi, In a case where you have a machine, some sort of battery-operated electric toothbrush that shoots water between your teeth.
Remember those?
Yeah, and I think that does even a better job than chewing bread. I don't know. I mean, again, you could ask the scientists. You know, we'll ask the dentist for oral, or the people who are in charge of this. But I'm just wondering if the goal here is to shoot out any particles of Gavina, I'm not sure if the best or most sophisticated method today is by chewing a piece of bread that came out of the oven a half hour ago and is cooled off. I would think that might be, compared to what we have today, that might be primitive. So I don't know that there's a gzeiras hakosev here or some sort of minog. You know, sometimes you have a minog and you have to follow the minog, even if it doesn't really make sense in contemporary life. You know, for example, I don't know if in your shul, sometimes in chutzlaretz, in Ashkenaz, you'll find that they recite Kiddush on Friday night in shul. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it here. I've seen it in
chutzlaretz, in Ashkenaz, minyanim. And that's all because you want to maintain an old minhag. You know, you don't want to change. I've seen people do bedikas chametz with a candle. And with all due respect, I mean, who can do bedikas chametz with a candle? You're afraid it'll... So why not use a flashlight? You know, you have a better method. So again, there's something called minhag b'Yisrael, and we want to be very traditional. But in this case, I don't know if you have to be traditional. I'm just throwing this out. Now the Gemara goes even further. And the Gemara says the following. Hani mili berechicha. Berechicha means fresh, you know, like soft and fresh. Aval bakusha, what happens if the bread gets a little bit stale and it gets too hard? In other words, we have to find the perfect middle here. It's not too this, it's not too that. It's kind of like baby lux, right? Yeah, it's not for mama bear or papa bear, it's baby bear. It's just right. So it's neither here nor there. It's not. If it's too soft, like we said that siori, right, the bread that's made of barley is too soft and it falls apart. We said that even chitim could be too soft if it's right out of the oven. But it can't be too hard. If it's too hard, that's called akusha. Akusha miloshen koshi. It becomes too hard. Rashi says koshi yosu midai. V'gam hu misparer b'tocha pekish shel siori. So you can have a bread that's made of chitim and has the same status as far as kinuach as siori. But that's all according to Rabbi Zeira. Now the Gemara throws out a curveball. It says v'hilchasa. With all due respect to Rabbi Zeira, we don't paskin like Rabbi Zeira, but rather b'chol mili havi kinuach. We're going to allow kinuach with everything. Any type of bread is going to be fine. And not only that, fruits, you know, you take yourself an apple, you know, take a bite out of an apple. I think an apple's a great example because it could really...
I have a dentist who told me that's a good way to clean your mouth.
Really? Yeah. It's a boksha kivati. I never asked the dentist, but it makes sense. But there are other fruits. Labar, but there's one fruit that we're going to exclude.
Wait, are you sure that komili means would include anything things that are not bread? Maybe it means all these types of
bread. I'll tell you why, because I'm a big chacham here.
Okay.
Why? Because I read the next line in the Gemara. That's why I'm a genius. Labar means with exclusion of kimcha. We'll get back to kimcha in just a second, but what I want to focus your attention on is tamri, which is dates in English, are excluded. And the reason why they're excluded is because if you take a look in Rashi says rachinhen. Now I'm not exactly sure what Rashi means. I'm not sure that tamri is so soft. But let's accept Rashi as axiomatic for the time being. Tamri is a fruit. And I'll prove it to you because in the next... First of all, it's one of the perishing Shtapcha Ben Eretz Yisrael, perhaps. Okay, that's complicated. But if you take a look at the next word in the Gemara, the Gemara is talking about Yarka. And the Gemara is now excluding Yerakos. Apparently, vegetables are soft. Now, I don't know, again, don't ask me questions. I have no clue why vegetables are softer than fruits. But the only single fruit that was excluded here is tamri. So there's something unique about tamri as opposed to other fruits. So there are three exclusions. There are only three foodstuffs that cannot be used for kinuach hapeh. The first one is called kemach. which is flour. Now, I never tried gargling with flour or chewing up flour, but I guess if you do so, it goes in between your teeth. But it's so soft that it really doesn't have that penetrating force that it could push out. It should, could push out any particles between the teeth. And for some reason, Tamri, which I don't understand exactly why, but Tamri is also very soft. I have a suspicion that we used to, our dried dates, you know, dried dates are not soft. They're mushy, but they're not soft. But fresh dates, which I don't know if you ever ate fresh dates. I very rarely do. You could come across the fresh dates. Those apparently are very soft.
You can get, not the yellow dates that people buy from Rosh Hashanah, but...
Yeah, the yellow dates, I think, are fresh, aren't they?
Yeah, but I don't know if they're particularly soft, but you can get brown dates that apparently aged a little bit, but actually quite still wet and soft.
Mm. So they're called brown dates.
Well, they're also brown dates, but these are particularly wet and soft.
Right. Now, here I want to read to you something from the tour. It seems, again, we're going to soon cross out what I just told you, but it seems when you read the tour that he had another girsa in the Gemara, or at least he reinterpreted the Gemara, and when it says kimcha, it's referring specifically to kimcha de siori, not excluding all kemach. And the Lavush, who came many, many centuries after the tour, he was 500 years ago, the Lavush, he quotes this tour, implying that every kemach, with the exception of siorin, of barley, of a flour made out of barley, is fine for kinuah. However, that's not how we paskin in Shulchan Aruch. In Shulchan Aruch, it says kemach, period. It doesn't specify to exclude only barley kemach. And it's crystal clear from the Shulchan Aruch that kemach, period, is excluded. All kemach. No kemach will qualify for kinuah. And all the poskim quoted that way. The Shach claims that there's a mistake in our text of the Tur. The Tur never wrote Kimcha de Sori, which we have in our text. Somebody added it. And it was not accurate. It was not appropriate. However, the Knesset HaGdola, his name was Ben Venisti, he lived about 4.5 centuries ago, he writes that no, we should take the Tur seriously. The Tur understood that when the Gemara says Vehilchasa, and the Gemara says that we don't accept Rabbi Zeir, but Becholmili we could use everything, then Kinuach Lebar Mikimcha, the only exception for, you know, for everything is good for Kinuach is only Kimcha. The Gemara didn't Lo Chazerba, rescind its original position that we distinguish between chitin and siorin. The Gemara is only coming to explain that ein chiluk ze omar le'inyan pas el le'inyan kemach. It's a brilliant interpretation of the Tur. The Tur is saying that the Gemara in the Hilchasa is changing our interpretation of the distinction between Siora and Kemach. We thought the distinction was in the pas. No, any pas is fine. And that's what Gemara is saying, all pas is good. The only difference is Kemach. Herein lies the distinction between Chita and Siora. Right? Shepask Sheir B'cholofen is the Knesset HaGadol. Ele'inina Kemach, and Kemach we just said is excluded, that's only Kemach mi Siora, and that's the Gemara's reinterpretation of the exclusion of Siora. We thought that the exclusion of Siora was a Pas Siora. No, a Pas Siora is fine. But rather we're excluding Kemach Siora. That's the interpretation of the Tur. I find this absolutely fascinating because, you know, the Shach went as far as to say, scratch out the Torah. He never said it. Some Talmud Torah maybe put it in. Because all the poskim from the Shulchan Aruch and on, they all agree that all Kemach is excluded. Don't tell me that Kemach Sior is different than any other Kemach. And it's a pella, you know, to take a tour and just say, you know, he never said it, and it's a toast, fuss, it's a printing error. That's That's not so satisfying, if you know what I mean. I mean, the Torah was around for many, many centuries before the Shach. You know, the Shach was 400 years ago. The Torah was 800 years ago or 900 years ago. So that the Shach should come along and say, let's cross out a word in the Torah. And the Knesset Gdola here, who is more or less a contemporary of the Shach, maybe even a little earlier than the Shach, he comes along and he says, "Nay, let's take the tour very seriously, and basically all Kemach is acceptable."
Wait a minute. If the Knesset Gedola came before the Shach, so someone else must have raised this possibility.
I don't know. It could be that the Shach had no access to the Knesset Gedola. It took me years to get the Knesset Gedola. Now I have one. I mean, I have the original, but I'm just telling you that the Knesset HaGedolah really took a stab at this, and he wants to say that even Kemach is okay. I think Gemara says Hilchos, so we have to exclude Kemach? Nay, this is the Gemara's reinterpretation of Siora. The Kemach Siora is different. Now again, I'd love to do a scientific experiment. I'd like to put, I don't know if you could buy, maybe you could buy Kemach Siora in the Shuk. I would assume somewhere you could get it, what's the name of that store?
Natural Choice.
And I'd love to see if there's any difference in the substance of Kemach Siora than Kemach Hito. But anyway, that's the way the Knesset Gedola interprets it. Very fascinating. Now, we're about to embark upon a new sugya. Just before we start this, I mean, again, it's all part of the same sugya, meaning a hefsek between Basar and Gvina. This is the 6-hour sugya, what I call. But before that, I just want to mention that he has a Ra'ah. The Ra'ah is one of the Chachmei Sfarad from the Rishonim. He says that the psul of Kemach and Tmarim, as opposed to Yerakos, is Mipnei Shem Nidbakim Bechech. They get stuck on the palate. The Eino Mekamchim also. And it won't really achieve your goal. Because again, you have to have something that you can chew and it moves around and so forth and so on. But here it's just going to get stuck on your palate. However, Psul Yerakos, that's already a different story. Mishum Shem Rakim Biyoser, they're very, very soft. Umisparim V'eino Mekamchim Esapeh. This is similar to what we discussed earlier about Pas Siora, that it just crumbles. So that Yerakos crumble apart. Kemach and Tmarim is something totally different. They just get stuck onto your palate. Now, according to the Ra'ah, perhaps when Rashi says, if you take a look at Rashi, Dibramaskal Kimcha, Rashi says, Rachim Heim, maybe he's going on Yerek. Very unlikely that that's the Pshat in Rashi. More likely is that Rashi used Rachim for all three categories. And they're all excluded under this reason of Rachim. So let's just make our scholar on the next sugya. I might go a little bit later because we started later. Whenever you have to leave, just leave. Boy mine Rav Asi mirav Yochanan. So we're talking about waiting between meat and cheese, let's say. So Rav Asi asks his Rebbe. Rav Asi was perhaps the most outstanding Talmud besides Mishlokas of Rabbi Yochanan. Kala Yishev ben Basa Lugvina. The man ate meat, and now he wants to eat cheese. Now you and I know that our minig is that we wait what's called misu'udu l'suda. That's going to be the next sugya, which we'll cover Mirshem tomorrow. But this sugya of Rav Asi Rav Yochanan is way before that. You know, we're not ready for the later Amoraim. This is first generation Amoraim. Alalei v'lo klum. You can eat your cheese immediately after you eat your meat. In other words, the halacha, the chachamim, prohibited eating meat and milk together, even if it's not cooked together, it's in the same mouth. But if you're eating a bazak or zeh, that's fine. So we now have three categories. We have a doraisa, which means you're not allowed to eat basa v'chol that was cooked together, derech bishalos v'torah. Then we have a darabonim, which is basa v'cholov in one peh biyachal, even though they're all cold. And now we have a third level, which is mutter, according to Rabbi Yochanan, is when you eat a bazak or zeh. Okay. Now, I had something to say, let me just see if I can remind myself. Yeah. It's very interesting. There's a Mishnah later on Daf Kuf Ches, which is perhaps the most famous sugya in all of this eighth parak of Basu, which is called Tipas Chol. In fact, today they have an institution called Tipat Chalav. It's based on this Mishnah. Now, the thrust of this Mishnah is that if there's a mixture between milk and meat, it's not necessarily awesome. Even if everything is boiling hot, it all depends on what's called nesinas tam. So, for example, if you have a drop of milk and it falls into 61 drops of meat, lav dafka drops, but I mean, say if the ratio between the milk and the meat is 1 to 61, then you're allowed to eat it. I'm going to give it to you for lunch. I mean that seriously. Though I'm not being dramatic. If there's bittel, I'm going to feed it to you. I'm not going to be machmir and feed it to my dog or anything like that. I'm going to eat it myself. I'm going to serve it at a shemar bros. Now the question that I have is, our sugya assumes, and we never question this premise, that you're not allowed to eat meat and milk together in one mouth. You may be allowed to eat meat and then milk and then cheese, but you can't eat it together in the same mouth. I mean, the Gemara only had a problem, well, in halal, maybe you're into gzeir l'gzeir because, you know, you're afraid that if you put this, you might put it in your mouth, and even so, that's also gzeir. But whatever it is, there's certainly a gzeir. Nobody is going to tell you you're allowed to eat cheese and meat in the same mouth. No one. So I'm wondering, in that Mishnah of Tipas Cholov, it's true that Tipas Cholov, in this case, is 1 to 60, or let's say 60 plus, but nevertheless, you're still eating meat and milk in the same manner.
Well, that's why they call it bitul, at least in modern halakha. Oh. Drop of milk? What drop of milk?
It's not there. So that's one answer, but the only problem with that answer is that there are Rishonim, and this is Shita Satosvis, that there's no bittul in what's called heter beheter. Bittul only applies when you have a mixture of Iser and heter, but if it's heter beheter, I'll give you the classic example. Did I mention this to you, John?
Yes, sir.
I did mention. I don't remember what I said and what I didn't say. And that is kelayim. For example, if you have one thread of flax that was sewn into a large, large beged made of wool, it's kelayim. There's no bittul. And Tosfos says, it's also a rush, that there's no bittul in heter beheter. If there's no bittul in heter beheter, then how do you understand the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Ches here in Chulin, that if the drop is so small, it's less than 1 to 60, it's a smaller ratio, meaning it's 1 to 61, then you're allowed to eat it. What do you mean you're allowed to eat it? You're basing yourself on bittul, but there is no bittul in heter beheter. And the answer is, the Mishnah is holding derech bishul asur Torah. When a person cooks something, whatever he adds to the any ingredient he adds to the cooking into the pot is in order to achieve tam, right? Otherwise, it's an exercise of futility. Why would you add milk to meat if you have any brain in your head, if the milk is going to be totally tasteless? It doesn't add anything. So for whatever reason it fell, let's say, you know, something spilled and a drop of milk fell in, that's not called derech bishul. Nobody would do a bishul of 1 to 61 because it doesn't enhance, it doesn't change the taste. So that what the Mishnah is saying over here in terms of no saying tam is not bittul. Nowhere does the Mishnah utter the word bittul, because it couldn't be bittul, because basar is heter b'fnei atzmo and cholav is heter b'fnei atzmo. There's no bittul in heter b'heter. Nowhere does it say bittul. It says that it's mutter if it's not benosin tam. It's mutter if it's not benosin tam because there was no bishul. Why? Because derech bishul also told, and a person would not be mevashel something in a ratio of 1 to 61. Now again, if I have pepper and I have this gigantic pot full of meat or whatever it is, I might add a very small amount of pepper, but that's a different story. That's because pepper is a spice, and it's a dabar omid l'tam. But Cholav is not a spice. And if you want to get some taste into the meat of cholav, again, I don't know, maybe I'll ask a guy, but he would say, oh, wow, you know, milk into meat, you know, like a cheeseburger, that's great. So you have to add enough cheese to the burger that it makes some sort of impact on the burger. If it's 1 to 61, it's completely null and void. You won't even taste anything. Yeah. So that's not derech bishul. So it's fascinating to me that on a drabbanan level, when we prohibit meat and milk together, it's not derech bishul. The Rabbanan are worried about meat and milk together, even if it's not derech bishul. So why is it that if you have more than 60, I understand if the ratio is 1 to 61, the Torah would not prohibit it. Why? Because that's not derech bishul. Nobody would cook in that way. But on a Rabbanan level, it should be also, because what are you going to tell me? Bittul? There's no bittul. It's heter beheter. So what are you going to tell me? It's not derech bishul. Okay, that's on a Doraisa level, but the Rabbanim said it's also even without bishul. You can completely bracket bishul and still have basa b'chol. Because basa b'chol, according to the Chachamim, meaning on a Rabbanim level of gzeira, is basa with cholav in the same mouth. So he's eating here basa with cholav in the same mouth. So I'm going to leave that question for now. It's a big question. So Gemara asks Amy, is it really true that you could eat basa, you could eat gvina immediately after you eat basa? Va'amar avchizda, achal basar, asur lechol gvina. So we have now a contradiction between Rabbi Yochanan's response to his Talmud Rav Asi and the statement of avchizda. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan said, go eat the meat, and then eat the milk or the cheese immediately afterwards. There's no waiting whatsoever. There's no wait time. And Rav Chisda said that if you eat meat, you're not allowed to eat cheese immediately. You need some wait time. Again, we're going to have to see later on how long you have to wait, but definitely have to wait. Now, the reason for this waiting period, according to Rishonim, is something called Basar Motzi Shuman V'Nidbak B'Peh. That meat is very oily, it has a high fat content, it's fatty. Certain meats are even more fatty than others, right? Like, I don't know if you ever ate lamb chops, the lamb chops are full of fat. And people find that very tasty, by the way. But in any event, the fat, the oily part of the meat stays in your mouth even after you swallowed it. So you know, the meat went down, your esophagus down to your belly, but in the meantime, you have some shuman of meat that's still in your mouth, and you taste it for a long period of time until it evaporates. It takes quite a while. So when he eats cheese immediately after meat, and the meat has what's called a tam shuman b'peh, right? It's a shiraim. It's a leftover. You know, we say the Yiddish is kiblibin. You know, something was left over in his mouth. Then he's basically eating meat and milk simultaneously. As we said before, you're not allowed to eat meat and milk simultaneously, according to the Chachamim, according to the Gzeiras Chachamim. But now the Gemara switches it around. Gvina, but what happens if he first eats cheese? Muta lechel bas. In other words, you can immediately eat meat afterwards. Again, that wasn't the case of Rabbi Yochanan. But in that case, even Rav Chisda would agree that gvina is not something that takes such a long time to digest, you know, and rid your mouth of any shamnunis, any leftover fatty substance of gvina. But as soon as you swallow it, that's it. The gvina is gone. We'll see later on, there's something called hard cheese, you know, that we don't eat it today. I don't know. Maybe you could buy it from Switzerland or something. You know, they process it for 6 months. And that cheese maybe is different. But our cheeses that we have, as soon as you swallow the cheese, that's it. There's nothing left over. Again, you may need kinua chapeh and adach. I'm not saying that. But at least as far as waiting a certain shahiyah, there's no need to do it. So now we have to reinterpret the question of Rav Asi and the answer of Yochanan. Ella says the Gemara, when Rav Asi asked his question, it was not about eating cheese right after meat, and Rabbi Yochanan allowed it, but rather kama yishe ben gvina lebasar. He wanted to know how long he has to wait to eat meat after cheese. Amar lei v'lo klum, and that doesn't contradict Rav Chisda at all. And that leads us up to Gufa, which is here in the Hemshech HaSugya. Now, in the Hemshech HaSugya, we're going to talk about what's called basar ben hashinayim. And this is a famous sugya in Hilchos Basar V'Chalav. What's the status with meat, particles of meat that got stuck between your teeth and you weren't able to remove them? Is that considered meat? Is that basar? How far did the Chachamim go? They worried even about these particles of meat, and for how many hours? So we're going to see the Shitas Rishonim who say that the 6-hour period that you need to wait between meat and milk is going to start ticking, the clock starts ticking after you get rid of basar ben hashinayim, only after you clean out all these particles. So B'li Neder, that's going to be our discussion for tomorrow.
Now we're starting at 7 tomorrow?
Tomorrow's Wednesday, we start at 7. Thank you for reminding me. I slipped my